Blog Talk Radio.
As the new year charges in with opportunities, challenges, and promising expectations, how can you assure that you're doing your part to enhance multiculturalism and diversity in your daily life? This show will feature six ways that diversity, multiculturalism, and inclusion can enhance your career path, your family life, and your community involvement. From watching historical movies to sharing your family history, you can indeed contribute to a very active way in activities that bring us together in light of our differences and similarities. The cost can be minimal. The impact can be great. You decide the ways that multiculturalism and diversity can bring new bridges to cross-cultural connections throughout the world. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thanks so much for listening. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we are marching along here in 2015. You blink, and time moves on. And as they say, as you get older, time moves a lot faster. So here we are in the middle of January. We've already had the holiday season. You've probably made lots of New Year's resolutions that you may or may not have kept at this point. But now, how do you really spend time with the rest of this year, the remaining 11 and a half months that we have? And I want to talk to you about the importance of how you can do it by looking at ways that diversity, multiculturalism, and this new word inclusion can really be a part of your package. Before we get started with those six ways, I want to say thank you to all those who are supporting the upcoming February 10th Black History Breakfast that we're having here in Boston at the Colonnade Hotel. You can get all the details at mssconnect.com. That's mssconnect.com. And you can go there for all the details. You can order your tickets online. You can download the information and see all the wonderful sponsors who are actually being a part of that great event, including State Street Corporation, who has signed up for a second year as our lead sponsor. Our host sponsor will be the Colonnade Hotel, and we're very happy to bring them on board in that capacity. And there are other organizations that are continuing to sign up for this great event. I'm excited because Reverend Carla Cooper, who is a pastor, also a professor at Doane University in Lincoln, Nebraska, or in the Lincoln, Nebraska area, and also the co-founder of AME India. As you know, I'm really attached and spending and focusing a lot of my time on India. We'll be going there with 38 women next month, right after this breakfast event. And again, mssconnect.com will tell you all about that, or you can certainly go to the other website, tellcarol.com, T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E.com, to learn more about the whole experience of India and how we're now connected to it as African Americans. It's just a thrilling experience, and it all happened because one graduate student went to India, participated in class activities, met another graduate student, and then ultimately small churches, which are now multiplying very rapidly, are part of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, now called AME India. So we're bringing her here from Lincoln. I have a real intent to bring people literally from around the world into the events that we have as part of the Multicultural Symposium Series so that people can learn from each other no matter where they happen to be or what their occupation, position, philosophical perspective happens to be, and we'll have a great time. This is the 22nd breakfast that I have had since the year 2000. It's going to be the best one yet. And we'd love for you to be there. So you can go to mssconnect.com, find out all about it, be there, bring your team, bring people maybe who have a sense of what is Black history all about. They'll have a chance to learn and participate at this wonderful event with great hot food. It's going to be a hot breakfast. not a continental breakfast, and definitely worth your while. So we encourage you to go spend time Tuesday, February 10th at this wonderful event. Well, we have a lot going on, as you can tell. I have a lot going on. Just was at a conference in the Hershey, Pennsylvania area this past weekend with 600-plus women, and it was just a wonderful event. It was the learning experience, and just lots of things in store for this year. So just getting back to my first couple of comments, again, we're already in the middle of January. So at this point, it's time for you to get your game plan together. Even our students that go to colleges late in January, they're heading back to school. So it's time to get in gear for 2015. I know it's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that we are talking about 2015, but it's here. And how can you, in a very practical way, very, very practical way, really participate in this diversity and multicultural movement? The number one thing I'd like for you to do is to watch historical movies. I'm going to expand, and I have this on my website, too, with the blog that I wrote today. Expand and watch historical movies or documentaries or docudramas just to get a sense of the placement of history in the context of diversity and multiculturalism. I'm going to recommend three. And again, because of the power of online activities, you can go online. There are whole channels now on YouTube that are nothing but documentaries. So you can pick your topic, pick the subject that is important to you, and dig deeper and find out a lot. And I should say that the companion of this should be reading books that correspond with the topic that you are speaking of. I'll give you a great example with the second movie I'm going to recommend. First movie I recommend is 12 Years a Slave. That was Best Picture last year for the Oscar. It was nominated for an Oscar, and it actually won as Best Picture. It is a fairly accurate portrayal. They've changed some things in the movies based on the book, but it is a fairly accurate portrayal of one slave, Solomon Northup, who lived in the early 1800s, was literally kidnapped in 1840, finally freed in 1852. He literally spent 12 years of his life leaving his home in New York and living in squalor and just eked out a living as a slave in New Orleans on several plantations. And you can read his narrative, and I would highly recommend seeing the book. Seeing the movie, that is. It's a tough movie to watch, but one I think that is important to understand why slavery was a very draconian institution in the United States, absolutely nothing romantic about it, but was in many ways the economic engine of this country and certainly the economic engine of the South. What I did, I purchased the book through Amazon. And then I listened to the book, because I listened to a lot of my books online with audio DVDs or CDs, and I went to Amazon, I went to YouTube, and found the book, full version of the book, being read by various volunteers, and read the book that way. So that gave me a clear understanding of the storyline, how he really had three children, not two children. So there were some things that were slightly changed in the movie that were not picked up from what the book had actually said. And Solomon Northup wrote this book, so this is something that he wrote. He may have had an editor. I'm sure he probably did, but he was a very prolific writer and a very, very smart man. So that is a book I'd recommend. That's a movie that I would recommend. And having discussions about it, the teaching that I'm doing now, I now have some of my adult students, because I mostly teach adults, who are now buying these books and buying these movies and having discussions with their families. And that is exactly what I want to have happen. And I would encourage you to do the same. So that's the first movie/book. The second is Lincoln. And Lincoln was written, actually it's called A Team. Lincoln is the movie. The book is A Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin. Lincoln, the book, is the movie is a Steven Spielberg movie that also came out about a year or two ago, won several awards, and zeroes in, narrow casts in, on the manipulations, the negotiations that had to take place in 1864, 1865, I'm getting my years mixed up, 1865, when the 13th Amendment was passed. This was at the very end of the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln, he had contenders, people who contested his policies, those who were in his corner, those who were not in his corner, but a brilliant way that shows his brilliance, leadership skills, tenacity, and just focus in winning the war, but ultimately freeing all of the slaves, not just the ones who had been picked up by the Emancipation Proclamation, but the 13th Amendment actually freed all slaves, regardless of where they lived, and this movie depicts that. Now, the movie is an adaptation of a much longer book, A Team of Rivals, that was written by Doris Kearns Goodwin. Again, you can go to the library and get this on audio CD, unabridged. That's what I did. And so I got through the entire book. I saw the movie, and I could understand the impact and the importance of that time period. So I think if you are a student of history, if you want to know why we have political wranglings today, read that book, and you'll say, my goodness, are we talking about 1864, 1865, or is this 2015 that we're talking about? Great book, great movie. Lincoln is the movie, and the A Team of Rivals is the book. The third movie I would recommend is the new movie that's out, Selma. Selma is a tremendous feat where it is depicting the sacrifices, the deaths that took place, and the tremendous amount of energy and effort put forth by all the people who participated in the three marches in Selma, led by Dr. Martin Luther King. Absent from this movie, or marginalized from this movie, and I have to say this, is the contributions of Dr. Ralph David Abernathy. The Abernathy family, as you know, they are my friends. I love them dearly. I am so grateful to have them as friends, and I am grateful for the contributions that they made. So this movie, unfortunately, marginalizes Dr. Abernathy and doesn't really put him in a visible light as he should have been. So that's the bone of contention that I have. But I still think it is a very, very powerful movie, and one that will help everybody who does not vote to understand the sacrifices that have been made by the people during that era so that the right to vote would be secured. I won't tell you any more. I just encourage you to go there. So those are the three movies that I would recommend to you, 12 Years a Slave, Lincoln, and Selma. Of course, we have countless others that we could recommend, but that's a great way, and because Selma is now up for an Oscar, and Golden Globe Awards as well. They won another award that they're probably going to be winning as well. I think you'll be topical and contemporary and current and will be able to participate in conversations in your local area because you have seen historical movies that really matter and make a difference. Number two is that I'd like for you to record your oldest relative and share their stories. All of us have relatives, young and old, those maybe who have just retired or those who have been retired quite some time, those who are in their 80s and 90s, and all of these wonderful people have great stories locked up in their heads. I would encourage you to get some kind of recording device, either your smartphone or something more sophisticated. Just sit down with a cup of tea. Do it in a very casual way. Help to prepare older people so that their stories can be captured, archived, and then passed on ultimately to your friends and relatives within your family group. All this information that I'm sharing with you, most of it is in my book, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. And you can read about that book and buy it also through my website, tellcarole.com. That's T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E.com. You can certainly get it there. Number three is to travel. Best form of education, cultural education, is through traveling. I'm just amazed that sometimes when you travel or sometimes when you write down that you want to go to a particular destination, a particular city or a country, and you write it down as I did in my book that was published a couple of years ago, and I said in that book, I want to go to India. And my goal is to go to India, and I figured out how much money it was going to cost, and I, you know, had a little plan in mind that I was going to put in place to really get it done. By writing down the simple words of where you want to go on a piece of paper or in a notebook or whatever can ultimately transform that idea into a reality. I am a witness. I've done this more than once. So actually putting down the information that I wanted to travel, one thing led to another, and not only did I go to India in 2014, I'm going to India in like three or four weeks on February 14th and taking 38 wonderful women with me. So the power of travel is the power of opening up your mind to new experiences, new people, new relationships, new situations that you never even thought about. Culture shock is definitely in order when you're going to different lands that may be different than your own. But it is probably the best way to give you a very keen sense of culture from other people's perspective. So I would encourage you to travel. Number four is to develop a clear knowledge transfer system, either at work or within your organization or within your faith-based organization, your temple, your mosque, your church, etc. I don't have to share with you about demographics. We know that in the United States, along with other countries, industrialized countries, those who are over 50 years old are mounting in numbers and are now leaving their workplace, or they're leaving their leadership roles, or they're leaving jobs of responsibility that have made a difference in their communities. What's missing is a transfer system, a knowledge transfer system, so that the knowledge that those who are ultimately going to be passing the leadership role on to someone else, that knowledge somehow systematically needs to be passed on to the next generation and those who are going to be left behind. It's one thing to leave, and a lot of people are leaving work and they're retiring or whatever, but they're not leaving behind the information necessary to help the next person to do their job even more effectively. I recommend in the book some kind of archival system, some kind of documentation system, so that that knowledge can be contained and retained for those who come afterward. So this can be a budget item. This can be something that's going to take some time and thought to put together, but some kind of system where the documentation will be in place, almost like a Library of Congress, should I say, where the information is ultimately stored and archived but ultimately passed on to those who follow. I'm hearing a lot, the drum beats are there about it's time. If you're a certain age, you need to pass that knowledge on. You need to step down and do things differently. And as a person who's been in a leadership role more than once and passed on my knowledge to people and younger people more than once, I've mentored quite a few people, so this is what I know. There are ways that it can be done in an effective and beneficial way, so that you don't feel like you're stripping yourself and giving away all the goodies, but you're doing something that is going to be meaningful and beneficial for those who maybe have the skills and talents, are emerging leaders, have a lot of potential, but still need your guiding hand to get it done. And I'm going to be talking more and more about this in the weeks to come and the months to come, because I think this missing piece is what is very, very much needed in this knowledge transfer world that we live in, where people are now in many large numbers leaving, retiring, et cetera, but needing to leave behind information that will be valuable for those who can absorb it and use it. Number five is to visit events, cultural activities in your region. No matter where you live, no matter how far you live in a rural area or if you live in a densely compacted urban area, there is some activity that you can participate in that is different from whatever your cultural activity happens to be. Come to mind, I think about weddings, even funerals, birth appreciation celebrations or baptisms, bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, any kind of religious organization where you can participate as an outside person. Those kind of experiences can really help you to sort of unlock the door to the cultural nuances and richness of your friends and your colleagues. I had the wonderful experience at Christmas time to do just this. One of my sons-in-law, I have two, I'm very happy to have two, is from the ultimately from the island of Cape Verde. And if you don't know anything about Cape Verde, it gained its independence from Portugal in 1975. It is off the coast of West Africa, closest to Senegal, and has a very rich multicultural history, very, very rich. So there are many, many Cape Verdeans who live in the greater Boston area. We have the largest number, largest concentration in the United States. New Bedford, Fall River, and Brockton has the largest numbers, and Boston itself. I had the opportunity of going to four different relatives' homes because of my son-in-law, with great food everywhere and table displays that were just beautifully laid out. And it was such a cultural experience for me, a very rich one, a very delightful one. They were speaking mostly in Portuguese and Creole. At the dinner table at the second home, we all held hands, and the blessing was said by the eldest, the matron of the family, who said her blessing in, I believe it was Creole, I'm not sure if it was Creole or Portuguese, and it was interpreted by me. And then just the wonderful conversations that took place after that. It was a rich experience for me, knowing about the Cape Verdean people, but never really going into a wonderful traditional home as I had the opportunity of doing at Christmas time. That's what I'm talking about in terms of a cultural activity. They can be fun. In my case, they can be rich in terms of food, but can be done in a way where you can learn and learn definitely about other people. So that is what I encourage you to do, and people love to get together, they love to socialize. There are public events that you can go to, folk festivals, music festivals, art expos that represent different walks of life, LGBT activities, all these in the span of time that will allow you to really learn about other people. So visiting these cultural activities in your region is number five. Number six is to exercise your civic rights. Three ways. Number one, voting. So I'd like for you to go see that movie Selma, and then remember that voting has a cost to it. It is not free. It has been paid for by the blood, sweat, and tears and life, literally people sacrificing their lives so that particularly African Americans, but really all people in the United States, can be guaranteed the right to vote. I am a voting nut. People know that. I just believe in voting. You have to pay your taxes, but I believe you have to vote also. So I don't have much tolerance for people who have the ability and the right to vote, who don't vote. I have a problem with that. But I'm hoping that you will exercise your civic right by voting. Number two is to participate in some kind of either discussion all the way up to a live demonstration. We have the Black Lives Matter movement all over the United States now, and there are ways and opportunities where you can participate in these very peaceful marches that are taking place. We just had the rendering, or almost are about to have the rendering, of the federal case against Darren Wilson, a law officer who used to be with the Ferguson Police Department. He has resigned now, who shot and killed Michael Brown. And it looks like he's going to walk and get off scot-free because of the evidence that's just not there to properly prosecute him. I think it's a travesty. I think it's horrifically unjust. And there are so many other cases, Staten Island, Cleveland, just go around the country, and you'll have other cases. Well, this is how you can exercise your thought and your feelings and beliefs, either in discussions that take place in your respective area, and there are many all over the country now that are happening, straight up to the marches that are happening. Last week, we had a group of individuals, mostly whites, who successfully barricaded one of the expressways here in Boston, tied up traffic in two different areas. They were taken off to jail. I salute them completely, and they were all doing it because of Black Lives Matter and that movement. So, again, there are activities that you can take place with. Now, I'm not encouraging you to get arrested, but I'm encouraging you to participate in some form or fashion, exercising your civic rights with some activity in your area that matters most to you. It may not be dealing with the social injustices taking place across the country, and people are talking and agitated about it. It could be something else, but just to get involved in some kind of way. And the third way is letter writing, which is not dead. It is very much alive. Letters to the editor, letters that you can post online, physical letters you can mail. I'm going to the post office later on this afternoon. Things that you can do where your voice can count. I understand that some people are in jobs where they can't politically get involved. I understand all that. But that doesn't mean you can silently sit back and see things that are wrong and not let them happen. You can get involved in a domestic violence situation that's taking place in your community or the eradication of domestic violence. That should be of concern to everybody, regardless of your job. So I'm just encouraging you to exercise your civic rights and do it in a way that will help to make a difference. So many things have happened in the United States and around the country because one person cared and one person stood up for what is right. And that is a drum that I'm going to continue to beat throughout 2015. So number one is to watch historical movies such as 12 Years a Slave, Lincoln and Selma. Number two is to record your oldest relatives and share their stories. Number three, travel, travel, travel. Number four, develop a clear knowledge transfer system either on your job in an organization or in your faith-based organization. Number five is to visit cultural activities or events in your area. And number six is to exercise your civic rights, including some kind of public display of demonstration or going to a discussion group about what's happening in the country or in your area, voting and letter writing. Those are your tips for the day. And, again, they can be read in Book 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. You can find out more about it at my website, tellcarol.com, tellcarol.com, and that's Carol with an E. I hope you have a great week or weekend. I look forward to coming back and talking with you next week with another important topic that helps us to focus on the importance of empowerment. And as I have said many times before, empowerment begins when you believe yourself. Have a great week or weekend, and we will talk to you next time. This is Carol Copeland Thomas.